Hello, this is your host, Cheryl C. Jones, with a warning. This podcast contains true stories of individual genius that may inspire you to take action in your own life. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to Getting the Best Results podcast, where each week we talk about shortcuts or techniques that will help you get the best results in life and business. It's all about learning a new method or approach, or possibly an insight or an idea that will contribute to your life in a positive way. I'm your host, Cheryl Jones. I'm an author, facilitator, professional speaker. My focus is on helping individuals and small businesses break through their common thinking to create bigger, bolder, better results. You can find me at simplythebestresults.com, where you will also find lots of helpful resources to break through. Let's get on with this week's show. This week, I have the pleasure of having Sarah Russell with me. Sarah has an incredible career that she has come through. Her career began in the financial sector, where she excelled as a leadership trainer and eventually a learning project manager for a Fortune 100 global initiative. After 14 years, she left to tackle life on her own terms, yet was still drawn to the realm of human performance and adult learning. No matter what the topic is, she loves digging into the humanistic challenges that we all face in order to rise above and break through complacency by re-engaging our power, passion, and peace. Nowadays, she helps companies from Fortune 200 to national nonprofits and local organizations, and has expanded her experience to include industries in tech, real estate, publishing, community service, health, recruiting, as well as oil and gas. Her mission is to help conscientious companies support their employees in resolving dysfunctional workplace relationships so they can best deliver on promises to each other, their clients, and ultimately the world. Please help me welcome Ms. Sarah Russell. Welcome, Sarah.
Well, thank you so much, Cheryl. It's a delight to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. Well, you and I have something in common when it comes to those humanistic challenges that we all have that sometimes we have difficulty rising above. And then when you get into the whole dysfunctional workplace thing, that's my jam, as you put it. I've heard you use that word, my jam. And, this is a fascinating conversation, I can tell, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm a little curious because you have, I know a little bit about your history, and because we've been friends for a while, and I want to know if you'd be willing to tell us just a little bit about your leap from corporate environment to doing things on your own terms and a little sabbatical type thing you took. I'm kind of throwing you a curveball here because I don't think you knew I was going to ask that question, but maybe know where I'm going with the two-letter mini wheels involved item.
Right.
What happened?
Yes, capital R, capital V.
As in victory, yes. As in vehicle, yes. That would be the story. So I think, that is you're a very interesting person, and this is one of the things that I think is super interesting. And then I want to get into all the other questions I have, but I would love to know about that jump from corporate environment to the RV.
Right. So as is often the case in life, there can be some event that kind of throws you forward, catapults you in unexpected directions. And for me, that was a personal event that was the D word. And so my husband had asked for a divorce, and it was, it's all good now, of course, but it kind of threw me at the time. And not having children, here's what I would liken it to. I felt like Julia Roberts in that movie Runaway Bride, where she likes the same eggs as every single man she's dating. And at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, I'm going to give it away, people. At the end of the movie, you find her in the kitchen and she's made every kind of egg she can think of. There's scrambled, there's poached, there's fried, and she is sitting there to figure out what she likes, right? So after my divorce, I literally feel like it was like 6 months every day looking in the mirror going, who are you? What do you want? What's next? Is this all there is? Because for me, once the title wife was removed, kind of like from above my head, like, it, you know, it was a label, it was an identity. Once that was removed, all of a sudden I felt compelled to start asking myself if the other labels that I had up there made sense anymore. And so fast forward to my very first vacation on my own, and my mother sent me with a book that had me do an exercise where it was essentially, you know, it was like a bucket list kind of exercise, I guess. And after I wrote it, you know, and I had some fun with it, I was like, well, does it have to be fantasy or can I do this? Like, what's possible? And so I revisited the list and I was like, what would bring me the most joy? And the most joy that I found in this really cool list was to hang out with my mom more. She's a wise woman, and but there was a problem with this. Mom was a full-time RVer, and so only way to hang out with her was to join her.
So, I got it.
Yeah. So that was the leap. That was how I got there.
Wow. And how long were you a full-time RVer?
2.5 years.
Wow. And where'd you go?
I know. Well, first I had to buy a bigger RV than mom's because hers was like a tin can and that was not going to work. So step one, actual, you know, accommodations. And then she and I made a plan for 6 months. I was currently living in Richmond, Virginia, and she was up in Maryland. Her lifestyle was that she would work at a campground with gardens, and somebody had kind of adopted her. So she kept going back there every season. When her season came to an end, she said I could pick her up and I was allowed to keep her for 6 months until it was growing season again, and I had to bring her back. So we went from Maryland, and we essentially went west. And there were a couple things that I had mapped out that I really wanted to do, and she added a few things along the way. So Kentucky, I'd never been through Kentucky before. Went to the Derby racetrack. We went to the International Hot Air Balloon Festival in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That was really cool.
That's fabulous. I've seen it. Yeah.
Right. Then we meandered over to the Colorado Springs, Denver area, and we did some spiritual things along the way. And so we had a cool experience there with a. What would she call herself? I think she would call herself something like a horse healer. Like she used horses to help you work through some deeper emotional issues. So that was kind of interesting. We made our way all the way over to California. We were in San Diego during Christmas, and that was gorgeous. I'd never spent time there. loved parking like on the beach. Like, who gets to do that, you know? And like throw open your door and there's the Pacific Ocean right there. So cool.
Wow.
That was 6 months. And then, coming back, I had to return her. And once I got her back, you know, my manager, where I've been working at Capital One, had been keeping an eye on me on Facebook. And I was like, so I see you're headed this direction. Should I be looking for a job? What's happening? And, man, once I got that freedom in my blood, that, it crept into my soul and my spirit, and I could not fathom having a typical corporate job. And I loved corporate America. I loved it. I thrived there. But I just turned a corner and I couldn't seem to go back. So I kept going. I actually upgraded my RV. And then it was just me and my dogs for the next 2 years. And we putzed around and we'd kind of hang out a little bit longer in places. I'd go places where I had friends. My best friend lived in Charleston, South Carolina. So I'd hang out there for like 4 months. And then I'd meander. Like, I went to Maine for the summer. Oh, man, if we all had that ability, Maine would not be so quaint anymore because it was fantastic. Says the woman sitting in Texas now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that I think that's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, that you really looked to see what it was that would feed your soul and then ran with it. You know, I think there's probably a lot of people who would like to do that. So, y'all, if that interested, Sarah Russell is the person to talk to because she could give you all the ins and outs on it.
I got the tips, man.
Right. Well, I couldn't go without asking more about that because, you know, I know that I feel like it's probably informed you in a lot of ways in terms of your growth and your confidence and your self, you know, self-esteem, as well as is just your attitude of, you know, let's take charge and make something happen. And I noticed those things about you. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, I just named off a whole bunch of wonderful things about you, but, you know, I'm wondering if there's a skill or a characteristic that has really helped you get the best, the best results in your life or in business or whatever. And I haven't even come, you know, I haven't even brought you back around from the RV to you. We'll have to wrap back around to that so we can find out how did she get to that from there to here. So, but I'm curious, just, you know, looking at skills and characteristics, What are the things that gave you the confidence and the ability or whatever it was that to take those kinds of things on? Because you've been very successful in everything that you've touched.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think a lot of people would say, gosh, I could never do that, right? I could never go traipse across the country and something. And so I have thought about what enabled me or formed me to be the person who could. And let's be clear, like I was scared. It wasn't like a easy choice that I just, you know, ran with. I still went through my pros and cons and everything. But if I had to narrow it down, I probably still have to say there's two things that I think really influenced me and continue to influence me. One is a book that my mom turned me on to after my parents went through a divorce. I was 14-ish, somewhere around there, and she gave me Norman Vincent Peale's book called The Power of Positive Thinking. And I remember because of the divorce with my parents, there was a lot of that's when things – we began moving a lot. And I was heartbroken when I had to leave a teacher, one of my favorite teachers. So this book, The Power of Positive Thinking, opened me up to the concept of visualization and how you can, in your mind's eye, put together a picture that feels good, and you can bring in the layers of what you see and what you feel. And I distinctly remember this image. I haven't thought about this in a long time. In my mind's eye, I returned to Cary, North Carolina, where we had been living, where we were about to move away from, so I was sad. And I returned to it as an adult in a red convertible car. It was wintertime, and I put the top down and sat in the parking lot of the condo complex that we lived in when we were there. And I remember in my vision, you know, I just was remembering all the good times and the memories and the family stuff. And then I went and found the grave of my favorite teacher, because apparently in my head, he would have passed away, which is terrible, but there you go. And I brought this red rose to his gravesite and just thanked him for being a father figure during my divorce and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sharing this unexpectedly, but because it came to fruition. I actually did this with my husband before we got divorced. And don't you know, he had a red convertible Miata.
And no kidding.
Yeah, so we went back to the neighborhood, to the condo place, not the grave. I couldn't track down the teacher. So happily, I'm hoping he was fine. But that, I mean, at age 14, when you're going through peer pressure and the body is changing and you doubt yourself, having something like that to anchor into my mindset, that has lasted a long, long time. And then on the heels of that, I mean, I have to thank my mom for providing that book, because then she just moved us all over the place. Like, I went to 4 high schools in 3 states. This
Holy
was
cow.
Not fun.
No.
Fun, man. You got a group of friends? Wow. Good for you. Now you got to leave them. And, oh, by the way, there is no Facebook. So if nobody wants to write, you're hosed
oh.
because your parents certainly aren't going to pay for long distance. Yes, people, it was a thing.
Yeah, we had to pay for long distance. I remember that. Yeah, definitely. And if you lived where I did, then there was a party line, so you had to take turns. But,
Woo-hoo!
You know, other people were using the same phone line you were. And it hung on the wall.
Right. You could
yeah.
not walk away. But if you had a 20-foot cord, man, that was living the life because you could shut doors.
It was.
Yeah, but wow. I have to say that influenced the heck out of me because, you know, in your teen years, again, I mean, hard, but I learned how to blend in. I learned how to flex. I learned skills that nobody would ever teach me, but it became a survival mechanism for just learning how to read the room. Literally, first day of school always seemed to be the second semester. So everybody's coming back in the middle of the school year, and this new girl with his crazy curly hair shows up, and you've got to figure out, okay, do I take that desk? Well, they look creepy, or do I take that desk? And it determines who you become friends with, who you sit at lunch with. And so that has served me so well as a trainer, as a speaker, as someone who walks into new and uncomfortable situations, just feeling the butterflies and not running away from it.
That's cool. So what I hear you saying is really there's two things. One is this, it's kind of a mindset anchoring thing when you use visualization to create your safe place, or I made that up. You didn't say that, but, you know, in terms
yeah,
of
that
anchor. And then the second one is this fitting in or flexing to any environment and being okay in that environment. Maybe the first one, the visualization of that anchoring event, is what allows you to flex and bend and be okay in those environments.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it even went so deep in me and was, again, influenced by my mother, right, who always would help me find the positive side. So what I began to learn was that it was not to fear the unknown because I was always okay. I always came out okay. I might not have liked it. I might have come home crying a few times, right? But I was always okay, and I'd find a friend, and then I'd find some joy there. So no lie, when I was married, I once upon a time asked my husband I was encouraging him to join the military because I wanted to move every 3 years because I became so accustomed to the excitement of a new place, whereas I've got a very close friend of mine who's struggling to move from the city she was born, raised in, went to college, but came back kind of thing. And I'm like, whoa. So it's, you know, we're all different and our influences, our experiences absolutely color our lives.
Mm-hmm.
How fun is that?
I think it's absolutely fun. Well, I see you using those skill sets today, although, you know, the visualization thing is very personal, but I do see, when I see you in groups, I see that you flex and blend in very easily. And tell me more about how that supported you, having that skill set has supported you in doing the work you're doing today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if I carry the same theme, if I think first about the mindset, well, I kind of mentioned already, I just assume things will work out, and they tend to, right? Now, that has hurt me in some ways, in case there's any other Pollyannas out there. It can hurt you in that people think you don't take things seriously, like you seem too laissez-faire about it, right? It's like, do you even care, Sarah? And I'm like, of course I care, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine. So it's helped me in a lot of ways, but sometimes it's hurt me. And I think now, I mean, if I were really honest with myself, I don't think I'm quite as optimistic as I used to be. And I think that is probably just because I'm learning, or I have learned, or I've been conditioned to dampen it a little bit. to not be that. I mean, I just call it Pollyannas for anybody who thinks this way, right? And why is that a bad thing? I think it's fantastic. So it can hurt. It can hurt me, and it can help me, right? Depending on which choice I decide to make. But for the other one, the flexing, it too was really hard for a long time. I think everything, there's always like the positive side of one coin. If you flip that coin over, there's an opposite side, right? And so that's kind of what I think I'm describing here. But for the flexing, the hard part was that I didn't understand it. I couldn't put it to words. No, I didn't go through a class called How to Be Relevant with Strangers. How to Find Common Ground. How
what
to
a
not
great
freak
course.
Out. Right. And so without having, doggone it, a label, I hate labels, but there it is, without having a label to point to, when I was going through management courses and being groomed to grow at Capital One, you know, I'd have like a skip level with my manager's boss, and he'd ask me questions, and he'd say, well, so how did you come to that assessment? And I'm like, just, you know, popped in my head, like, felt right.
Felt right, so intuitively.
Yeah, it was tough. But once I learned kind of the strength of it, even though I couldn't articulate it, I realized like I've got some kind of magical abilities, and I started leaning into it and accepting it. And I would just state, I have very strong intuition, and it is almost always accurate. And I would just own it. That was a game changer for me, and it wasn't so much a game changer in corporate America because I was really coming into it right then, right about when I left. But it definitely was a game changer as an entrepreneur because, if you want some personal growth, go out and start your own business. And you need a game changer on your side.
Definitely. Well, so in terms of what you're doing now and owning your own business, how have you evolved and what's taken place?
Oh, so much. Okay, so I started after I journeyed around for a little bit, like it's probably about a year or so, and money was starting to go, you know, south, and I was like, uh-oh. And a friend called me and said, hey, I know you're loving your life, but I'm working here, and we really need someone with your expertise to help us on this project. And you can be anywhere, as long as you have internet, and you can pick your own hours, and here's the pay. And I was like, well, hot dog, here we go. So I was contracting. I guess I would say I was an independent contractor. And I had never owned my business or a business. So I didn't know anything other than to accept this contract work. And I kind of fell into the trap of like being their employee. They'd have a project. They'd say, hey, can you help us with this? And my answer was, always yes. And then I became at their beck and call, you know, and I slipped into the same behaviors I had in corporate America, which was working like a banshee, because I didn't have anything else to, you know, occupy my time, especially now that I was single. And that lasted for like way too long. And then when I met this fabulous man that I am now married to, who his first job, his first making money was like in, I don't know, he was like 7 or 8 years old.
Oh,
and
goodness.
He never stopped. So he's like a serial entrepreneur, right? So I'm on this one side trying to inch my way over to being an entrepreneur. He doesn't know what a J-O-B is. Doesn't make any sense to him. And he's giving me this advice and just kind of, you know, holding the mirror gently and saying, look, you're not an employee. You own your business. You have power. You get to make choices. And it honestly took a couple of years before it really got like sunk in and got in. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I can decide who I want to help, which kinds of companies, what they are focused on. I can like interview them to see if it's a hot mess that I would be stepping into. Like, where has this been? And I love it. And And ever since I started making that shift, you know, not surprisingly, more money is coming in. I'm more empowered. And I would almost describe it as I am emboldened. You know, I operate with this power. I don't just feel empowered. I act that way. I'm more decisive, and I'm a little bit more direct too. With like, this is the way we're going to do this, versus asking for their guidance and directions. I'm the expert, and thank goodness I finally got here, because I would not wanted to have lived the rest of my years with my business doing it the old way. Y'all don't do that.
So don't do that. No. So the lesson here is, how would you encapsulate what you've just said into an idea or a concept? Because I heard you say you're emboldened, you're owning it, as a consultant, you're telling clients what they need to do or what we're going to do, and rather than asking permission. So I get where you've come from and how you've gotten to this place. Is what is the nugget here that if I was a brand new entrepreneur, what would you tell me? What would you tell me to do to start getting like better results from the get-go?
I would tell you that your tendency is going to be to play small and to feel small, that all of your instincts are going to guide you into a smaller box. And that you would do yourself a huge disservice, that you would be doing your clients a huge disservice, your family a huge disservice, if you did not spend the time to go inside and find what is unique about you. Where have you had success? And then start looking for the patterns. And follow those patterns. It's almost like reverse engineering. And really, the business coach that helped me the most had me do that. She had me kind of reverse engineer into where is my expertise? Because I did all this stuff. I had all these great results. But until she started asking me these questions with, well, what's different between you and, you know, like your colleagues? And she made it really soft and easy. So I didn't feel bad about bragging or pointing out that I have, like, saved people's jobs with what I do. Mm-hmm. But until she did that, I just really didn't recognize that I had something of unique, true value. And I think that's probably what early entrepreneurs, I think that's the biggest struggle. I think it's all internal. It's an inside job.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I know, darn it is right. Yeah, if we only could hold a mirror up to ourselves and see what others see, automatically, right? For the most part, you know, when we're not paying attention.
Yeah, so true. Words.
So how, I know, words, yes, exactly. So can you describe for me kind of what you are doing now? What are you doing now? What is your business all about?
I'm having so much fun right now. I've literally gone from being like an order taker who had no employee benefits, who had no vacation, no health care, you know. And I am now the owner of a learning development company. And that company helps value-based companies with less than 2,500 employees to resolve the kind of common dysfunctional workplace relationships that can creep up. And that helps them really maximize the fullest potential of their teams, but also help their customers, right? Because they as an organization have made promises to their customers. And right. I mean, in this day and age with consumerism, you can't slack on that. And I love it. And I love that I get to work with those conscientious companies. There's a term out there called conscious capitalism, and I love it. And it's those kinds of companies that recognize, we're getting money in, but we need to give it back out, right? It's a cycle. It's not just I'm going to suck up all the money and give everybody giant bonuses. No, it's our intention. Like Tom's Shoes is a good example. You know, you buy a pair of Tom's Shoes, they're going to give a pair to somebody in a third world country. And I love those kinds of clients, and I love being able to pick and choose who I want to work with. And I look for those organizations that understand the importance of setting people up for success. And without my company's help, I feel like their leaders would probably continue justifying, like spending all these long hours on tactical work instead of strategic work, because for them it's just easier to do it themselves, or it's easier than having that difficult conversation.
And I
get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
absolutely
hearing you get that too.
Oh yeah,
you know,
definitely.
If we don't solve for that kind of stuff, it kills the workplace culture. It diminishes the productivity of everyone. And it just, it can ignite the kind of frustration or gossip or what have you that just, it costs money. It hits the bottom line. So I love that, that what I'm doing helps people first, people in the position first. That's my first focus. But then it also helps these companies do great things in this world. And, you know, man, what a joy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I can tell you're a little excited about it, which is even nicer.
I get excited.
Well, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit, because I am curious, and I ask all of my podcast guests this, who or what has had the biggest influence on you becoming the person you are today? I think it's nice to check back in and go, how did we get here? Who had the biggest influence, or what had the biggest influence? And who is it, or what is it for you?
You know, putting my fantastic mother ever so gently to the side on her pedestal, I would say the person, without a doubt, the name just pops right in my head, and that's Robert Baer. Robert Baer of New Orleans, Louisiana, where are you? He is, oh my gosh, he opened the door for my training career back when I was working for the bank. They were going to change the whole system and the sales process of the entire bank, and they wanted to do it all at one time. Like, they wanted to literally flip a switch so that the next day it was a different platform system, and oh, by the way, Now you're consultative sales folks. And so, yeah, it was a fairly daunting challenge. So their process was to hire this guy, Robert, who was brilliant. And he said, okay, we're going to create a SWAT team. I'm going to hire 10 people from the different regions of the bank, bring them all here to New Orleans, teach them everything, and then turn them loose. So I got to be on the SWAT team. And then after it was done, I was honored to be asked by the head of corporate education to come in and redo the entire onboarding program, because, of course, now everything's totally out of date.
Oh, sure.
And so that's how I got in. But the thing about Robert that made the difference here, and I use this myself still to this day when I'm hiring, whether it's vendors, contractors, employees, is hire for attitude, not for skill.
Ah.
If he had been looking for somebody with skill, he would not have hired me. I was not a trainer. I had never gotten up in front of anyone and spoken. I didn't understand instructional design or adult learning methodologies or Bloom's taxonomy. So he opened that door, and as is the case in my life, I did really well and was asked to take the next role, which was the next move up. And I've never lost, I guess, my passion or my hunger for it. And the other thing that I think was really cool about Robert, I dug him so much. He was such a good manager. We'd come to him occasionally and we'd complain, you know, like the operations department is, they're not doing this or they're not doing that or whomever it was. And he would look at us with his kind, empathetic eyes, and he'd say, okay, well, I'll go to fight for you just as soon as all of your ducks are in a row.
Oh. And what did he mean by that, though? That's pretty cool, though. I mean, because he had your back, but he wanted to make sure something else was in order first. That mean,
yeah.
What did that mean exactly?
I think it was his way of guiding us to really look exceptionally close at what we were producing and look from somebody else's perspective. Like, what holes could they shoot in the way we were doing things? So I don't think anyone's perfect. I think that's what he was saying without saying it, you know, like as soon as you're perfect. And there were times where we would come to him and we had it all flushed out and we had our plan Bs and we had reasons for why everything was structured the way it was. And there were a couple times where he's like, yep, I totally get it. All right, I'll go have a meeting. And he would go fight for us. And, you know, whether that was whether that was really wise, which it definitely was, or maybe it was almost like self-preservation for him. Like, why would a manager ever want to go fight with another manager of another department if they could cast blame backwards? Like, you know what, if there was something that they could say, well, that's all nice that you want us to do this, but until you have fixed this, why should we? And I think it was wise really on both sides. And watching him, he was a great, great leader. And so that's what I love about helping managers today, because I know the impact he had on my life. My life, my family, my career trajectory was this wonderful, his title might have said manager, but he was a leader to me. And so when I go into organizations and I can help leaders understand themselves, understand their team members, understand even the nature of politics, you know, corporate politics, and help them navigate that and find the truth, which is typically not as bad as you think it is, and allow them to start having conversations where, you know, things move forward and there's no more frustration. Oh my gosh, I know the ripple effect. And so I'm, again, just honored that I get to play in that space. Thanks to Robert Baer.
Applause for Robert Baer.
Round of applause.
Yeah.
Left that organization, I wrote him a letter. And every time I talk to him, which is just every few years, he'll remind me of this letter. It was on purple stationery, handwritten. And I told him what a great, great, great manager he was. And a couple of times I happened to see him in person, and he had his work backpack with him, and he pulled that thing out.
Oh, he still had it. That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
That's really cool.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and talk about teamwork. Everyone is a member of some kind of team, a work team, a family team, even a volunteer team. And the truth is, very few of them work well. In fact, think about your work team. Is it producing the results you expect? Do all of the team members get along and communicate well with one another? If you answered no to either of these two questions, then you already know that your team is not operating at its fullest potential. To get a better idea of where the dysfunction lies within your team, you need to take a closer look at how the team currently functions. To do that, visit my website and take the free Team Mastery Assessment. You can find it at simplythebestresults.com/team. Once you complete the assessment, I'll send you the results along with a few recommendations of things that you can do immediately to begin creating a more cohesive and high-functioning team. You know, your team doesn't have to continue to operate in a dysfunctional way. You can start making a change today. Again, that website is simplythebestresults.com/team. Now, back to our program.
The relationship, well, one, man, it's what makes the world go round, even at work.
Oh, I know. Really, I agree completely. Relationships are everything. Yeah. So speaking of relationships, if you could go back in time and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you tell her? What guidance would you give her?
The good question, Cheryl. Well,
thank you.
Dear young Sarah, I would tell her, because I've only just shaken this the last few years, I would tell her to learn, but don't over prepare. It creates stress, and it's taking more time away from other things. So learn, but don't ever prepare. I would tell her that those butterflies you feel, they're not bad. They actually mean that you care, that you're invested in what you're about to do. It doesn't mean that you're incapable or unworthy. I would tell her to whiteboard everything, because when she sits there and stares at the paper with pen in hand and nothing's coming, every single time I have gotten up to whiteboard it, like, things start flowing. So hello, young Sarah, please just get up off your tuchus and walk over the whiteboard or something, anything. And then the other thing that is, I would have loved to have known, hopefully my younger self would have taken all this advice, would be don't let the good advice of others define your path.
Ooh, that's a good one.
There's a lot of good advice out there. I think I'm giving good advice right now, but it doesn't necessarily apply to everybody every single time. And I've gotten off my path, and I've spent tens of thousands of dollars trying to force fit, you know, the round peg in the square hole because it was good advice and it made sense at the time. So that just kind of goes back to, you know, going inward and knowing yourself and being willing to be honest, which I think it is so hard to be honest with ourselves. That's why therapists are, you know, doing well. It is hard for us to do it on our own. And that's the key. No doubt about it.
Yes. Well, we definitely have, all of us have blind spots. So, I mean, it's a little hard to see the center of your back. I don't know, even a contortionist probably cannot see the center of her or his back. So, anyway, that being said.
I love that.
Blind spot. Yeah. So tell me, what is next for you? What are you focusing on? And yet we are in the middle of the pandemic, and we really don't know exactly what the future holds, but I'm sure you've been thinking about it even before this came about. And I'm wondering what's next on the horizon for you?
Yeah. Well, good news. I'm super busy. Bad news, it's at the cost of, you know, others, right, with the pandemic. But I am converting, I have so many clients that have me converting their in-person classes to virtual classes and providing a lot of expertise and guidance around making that move. So that's just kind of been the side thing that I know and that I do that, you know, if they need it and they're my clients, then obviously this time requires that we help everyone that we can. But as far as my business, my company, I'm growing it. Like, the year of 2020 is the year of growth for me and my company. And so I've been meeting with people, additional instructional designers, additional facilitators. I am really honing in. I'm getting closer to the circle on my back with the help of other people. As far as who my target market is, and I think this is important for any business owner. That's another piece of advice I might have given myself. Like, don't sweat the fact that you're going to make adjustments along the way. It's rare that any business stays the course for ever and ever and ever and ever and ever, right? It almost could be at the detriment of that business. So I'm using this time, my spare time when I sleep, to evaluate and determine what makes the most sense for me and my company going forward. And I really do still think it's in the space of workplace relationships. So I'll be shifting some of the, like, I've done like a lot of work at home tips on LinkedIn, just to help some of those rookies out there who aren't as familiar with the pitfalls as I am. And I'll be shifting those tips to be talking more about running effective remote meetings, for example, connecting to their team members, to their customers. How the heck do you do that when you don't have body language and you don't have those visual cues, you know? And how do you get comfortable in front of that doggone camera with Zoom or WebEx or whatever you're using? Because, again, people always buy from people, and people follow leaders. And I do believe the leaders still are people too. So I'm staying in that space and just being grateful, honestly.
That's awesome. Oh, I'm sure all of that's going to make a major contribution to people. And I'm so glad that you're offering that. And keep up the good work, because I know you're making a difference out there.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, before we go today, before we wrap up our show today, I want to make sure that I take a moment to make sure that people know how to reach you. So how would you like them to reach you?
I would love it if people would connect with me on LinkedIn. And the way you can search, well, I can give you the URL, because anytime you have a never mind, back up. Beep, beep, beep. Here's how you can find me on LinkedIn. Search for Sarah Russell Speaker. If you want the URL, it's linkedin.com/in/Sarah Russell Speaker. That's where I spend most of my time. But of course, folks are welcome to email me directly. I'm not shy. My email is sarah@gobeyond10.com. That is a website I'm also redoing right now in my spare time. And, you know, if they want to give me a call, shoot me a text, I'm down with it, man. I'm 512-687-6234. I am here to serve.
Wonderful. So I'm going to repeat that. You can email her at sarah@gobeyond10, that's TEN.com, and her phone number is 512-687-6234. All righty. Sarah, thank you so much for being our guest today. I just so appreciate your insights and your willingness to share what you've learned through your experiences, and I wish you all the best in all that you're doing, and just air hugs to you since we're on a podcast and I can't hug you. And it's that time where we can't hug anyway. So, so well, I wish you all the best.
Thank you. And thank you. Just a boomerang back to you for what it is that you're doing and creating for others. I mean, getting simply the best results doesn't come by, you know, resting on your laurels, and you're actually providing tools and resources for people to be able to do that. So well done you.
Well, thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that. And thank you all for listening to us today. I hope that you've gained some really cool insights and information. And we will see you on our next podcast. Until then, take care and stay healthy and well. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star rating. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button. To connect with me, Cheryl C. Jones, you can find me on LinkedIn and Facebook by my name. Don't forget that Cheryl is spelled with a C-H, and be sure to include my middle initial, the letter C. You're welcome to email me at cheryl@simplythebestresults.com or visit my website of www.simplythebestresults.com for more information and inspiration. This has been a GSTBR production, created and hosted by me, Cheryl C. Jones, edited by Brandi Hockaday, and produced by Kathy Holscher. New episodes are available each Thursday on Apple, Stitcher, Spreaker, Google, and many other podcast directories. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.